and welcome into the Who's On Podcast, part of the Saber Podcast Network. All right, it is episode 100, the centennial episode of the Who's On Podcast. It's been just over a year, 100 episodes, more than 50 guests. We've launched our new YouTube channel in the past year. And you can go follow that, of course, at the Who's On Podcast YouTube channel. And we've got the post-game reports up there now after each game. But just a quick shout-out and thank you to everyone who was followed and listened, downloaded, shared anything about the Who's On Podcast in the past year. It's greatly appreciated as we go on this fun little journey here through UVA Athletics. And speaking of which, my guest today for episode 100, you know, you got to bring out the big guns. So I got the voice of the Cavaliers, John Freeman, joining me here today for episode 100. It's been a while, John, since I've had you on here. Obviously, we've talked in between those appearances, but how you doing today, man?
I'm worried about the future of your podcast. If for episode number 100, you're having me on. This is like getting Oasis back together and having Nickelback open. This is not good news for your podcast, having me on for 100.
Like my wife was like, maybe you should do like a looking back thing or do some kind of special episode. And I was like, nah, we'll just do a recap. I'll get John to come on and we'll just plow right through the episode 100.
All right, just promise when you get to 1,000. It'll be somebody else.
God willing, if we make it, I'll make that promise. But got a lot to talk about today. Virginia winning their ACC opener 48-20 over Stanford this past Saturday, the first ever meeting between these two non-Ivy League academic elite programs. John, we'll start off with how I do every recap now. One big takeaway from this past Saturday.
Offense is good. We're almost like at the point, it's amazing how you can go 3 years just like starving for any sort of ACC win. Like, we'll take whatever we can get. You know, we went on the road at Wake Forest last year, which ended up being a pretty bad team.
Yeah.
And we won by a single point and we were ecstatic. And now here we are, a 28-point win over Stanford where it's comfortable throughout. And Tony Elliott is like, reaming his players to start the fourth quarter based on their performance in the third. So it's amazing how quickly things have changed. I first started 4 years ago and my first offense was the Brennan Armstrong high flying aerial attack. And I just remember being like, man, is it always going to be this way? And then the answer clearly was no. Because that era came crashing down pretty quick, but there's a lot of similarities between that high-flying offense and this one with quarterback play, with wide receivers, a great offensive line, talent, depth, speed, size, all these things. The only difference is now we got a defense. You know, Brendan didn't have a defense. And the fact that we're also getting stops, the defense played really well against Stanford other than a few big plays, you know, forcing turnovers, time of possession, again, favored towards UVA. Like, all the metrics are looking good for Virginia, and now we put them to the test against probably the best opponent we'll face all year.
Well, you mentioned just the similarities to that 21 team, but the one big difference offensively for me is the substantiveness of this offense, because it's not just the one, you know, thing. It's not a one trick pony of, you know, throwing the ball to all these great receivers. You got a great ground game now, and that's something that we haven't seen Virginia have in quite some time now. And I know it's something that people have talked about for years, and you know, in that 21 year, you had a couple different running backs, but you know, it was never a really key part of the offense that season. And so to have, you know, guys like Jamari Taylor and Xavier Brown and Harrison Whaley, just this kind of bevy of running backs and an offensive line that can clearly block for them. It, like, the number that comes to my head, or the one big takeaway that came to my head, is balance, because this is the, you know, UVA, I got this later in the rundown, but UVA ranks fourth in total offense, but they're the only team in the country averaging at least 300 passing yards and 250 rushing yards. That's as balanced as it gets right there. And they're doing it exceedingly well in both areas on offense.
And Tony Elliott said it right when he took over. He's like, we're going to run the ball. And it took a while because
there were some eye rolls.
Yeah, well, he inherited basically no offensive line and a team that was built to throw. And the transition really struggled. And we've finally gotten in the players that have allowed us to be able to enact Coach Elliott's plan of running the ball. And another thing that you take for granted that Virginia's able to do this year is we can get the yard when we need it. How many times in the last season was it third and one or even fourth and one? We're in the shotgun. We need a yard or half of a yard, and you just can't get it. Like, that was the story of Coach Elliott's first season. Like, we just could never get that yard. And now we can get that yard, move the chains, keep our talented players on the field. And the more times they snap the ball, the more likely they are to put some points on the board. I saw that. This is a wild stat. It's like Virginia's averaging like 0.5 points per snap. Think about that. Like,
That's a
I know you
crazy
can't
stat.
score 0.5 points in a single play, but the offense has been prolific. And now we go against a defense that played really well against Alabama. So this is a different animal coming here into Charlottesville. It's a lot different than a Coastal Carolina or a Stanford team that lost to Hawaii, or even an NC State team that, looked absolutely porous against Duke, in the second half. So this is a different beast for sure.
You mentioned the ability to pick up that extra yard. They don't have Grady Brosterhouse right now, so there's no Grady Bunch right now. But they found other ways to do it, and Jamari Taylor is just a load to bring down. There was a fourth and one there. I think it was the first half, and Virginia had a healthy lead, and everyone's like, why are you going for that? Or I had Michael McGraw sitting next to me from our Preferred Walk-Ons podcast on the Sabre Network, and he was like, I don't know if you do that. And I was like, no, it's Madden rules. You're up big, just go for it, go for the gauntlet there. And Taylor picked it up with pretty much relatively easy first down there, on a fourth and one near midfield. So they definitely have that ability now. We'll talk about the Garnet and Gold a little bit later on, but let's get into our who's on player of the game. A couple options this week. The offensive players, obviously, with the runaway guys and getting the votes in the poll, but Trell Harris. Not only did he get three touchdowns in one quarter, but he also pretty much wrapped up the who's on player of the game in one quarter. For the game, four catches, 145 yards, three touchdowns. First UVA player with three touchdowns in a game since Olamide Zaccheaus in the 2018 Belk Bowl against South Carolina. There have been four players since 1995 with three receiving touchdowns in a game. Kanan Severin at Louisville 2015, Wally Lundy at NC State in 2003, Zaccheaus, like I mentioned before. And John, just because I knew you were coming on, I knew I had to do a little extra research, a little extra digging. Harris is the only one to get three touchdowns in a quarter.
And he got it in the first. Like, we're sitting there being like, is he on, he's on pace for 12 touchdowns. Like, is this possible? And honestly, he wasn't in on a lot of packages later in the game. Like, you saw Eli Wood catch a touchdown, and the way that we put a backup quarterback in and only let him throw one time. So if this had been a more competitive game, I think he would have had more than four catches for 145 yards and three touchdowns. So that makes it even more impressive that he had a condensed amount of time to get it. And then how about Wally Lundy in 2003? Those
I
pro days. I was joking with Matt Schaub the other day, who's coming up to do the game.
He would
He
remember
played
that
it.
game well.
Yeah, he played a game against Florida State where he threw like 53 passes. I was like, did your arm fall off? He's like, nah, just check downs to Alvin. Check downs to Alvin the whole time. So that was a different game back then when you're throwing 13 times to your running back out of the backfield.
I was gonna note that that game for Wally Lundy was the kind of duel between Philip Rivers and Matt Schaub down in Raleigh back in 2003 that Virginia lost, but it was a fun game to watch for at least most of it. Trell Harris, the last time he scored a touchdown, you mentioned that Wake Forest game. That was the last time he had actually gotten into the end zone, more than a year ago, against the Demon Deacons. That was kind of a breakout game for him, and it's crazy to think, the next week against Maryland, kind of has an okay game. That wasn't a great game for Virginia overall, but then, don't see him again until the Tech game at the end of the season. And then earlier this year, he had that great catch against Coastal Carolina, but there's just been so many different guys in this offense that you can go to with the ball that it hasn't been like, oh, feature number one receiver, Trell Harris, go throw to him, 8, 10 times a game. They just haven't had to. So it's kind of been a little waiting game for Harris, and That was his game. And there was three players. It was the third straight game that a player has had three touchdowns for Virginia, and it's been a different player each game. Jamari Taylor, Harrison Whaley, and now Trell Harris.
There's a few players that have kind of had big games and then gone quiet. What I love about this team is they really aren't concerned with their own performance. So here's a couple examples of that. Jamari Taylor had the 14 game rushing streak with a rushing touchdown. 14 straight games. Like, that's a huge streak. And he doesn't get one. We're close to the goal line at one point. Whaley, gets us down there, and Coach Elliott keeps handing it off to him, and then we throw the touchdown to Eli Wood. And that essentially ends the chance at the streak. And RJ James, our sideline reporter, was down on the sideline, and Taylor came off the field just smiling. And him and Coach Elliott shared a moment where they just smile and they're like, well, what are we going to do? Eli just caught his first touchdown. How great is that? And then another thing too about like the wide receiver group. So Trell has this big game. He's been relatively quiet or hasn't gotten a lot of touchdowns. Go look at Jamal Edrin blocking in the last
Yes.
game.
On a play that Jamari Taylor scored on, but it got called back because of a holding. But that, I think I'm thinking about the same blocking that he had down there. He pancaked a guy in the end zone.
And he did it all game. Like, he was controlling the edge. Like, he blocks. He really wants his guys to get in the end zone. And when somebody else gets in the end zone, that means, your chance at catching a touchdown goes away. But these guys are all committed to the team. And that's nice to see in this era, because I heard it all the time coming into the year, like, oh, they're just mercenaries. Oh, these guys don't know anything about Virginia. They don't care about the school. They don't care about the team. They're just here for themselves. And it's not true. Like, these guys have come in and they are all in on the University of Virginia. They care. They love their teammates. They're playing for their teammates. They're happy when somebody else contributes. This has been a really fun experience with this group. And in all honesty, it surprised me how they've acted in that sense too.
I'm glad you brought up Edrin because I had it in my notes, but I didn't put it in the rundown. But the blocking by him, that's the kind of stuff that, he's had a couple good plays as a receiver, but the blocking, I feel like that's going to get him a shot in an NFL training camp next year because there's not many guys that, receivers that can block and like are committed to blocking like that. Now time for our weekly segment of the Des Kitching's cooking in the kitchen. Third straight game with 500 plus yards of offense. It's the first time since 2021, of course. Probably most offensive stats you could go back to that one, but first time since 2004, UVA has scored 30 plus points in the first four games of the season. They currently rank 11th nationally in scoring at just over 45 points per game. The 21 team, they put up a lot of yards, but they didn't always consistently get into the end zone. Part of that is they didn't have the run game to consistently effectively get into the end zone. But this offense, like I mentioned before, they're the only offense in the country with 300 plus passing yards and 250 plus rushing yards per game right now. It's just kind of the complete package, and I keep kind of showering Des Kitchings with praise after all the criticisms that he's had over the past couple of years, and it's just another game to kind of give him his cookies, give him his praise.
I thought he was exceptional. And there's a lot of differences between this year and last year's team. One of them has just been the aggressiveness of the play calling. First play of the game, we're looking at a flea flicker. Now, it didn't come off.
If he had a half second more to throw, Morris would have
That
got that.
immediately sets the tone. We're going to put you on your heels. I got to have a talk with Dez, because we can't have any more of these direct snaps to the running back, handoff to the quarterback, fake reverse. Like, how am I supposed to call that on the radio? I had no idea who had the ball or what was happening. And then suddenly Chandler Morris is just walking into the end zone. So we got to cut that out. But he's had an exceptional year of calling plays. And one thing that's always been good with Dez is his script going into games. Like, our first 10 plays, when he's got time to sit down and think about how to attack a defense, like, how many times have we gotten the ball and just gone down the field with some really inventive plays and concepts? Way more than it feels like our opposition. Stanford just kind of came out and ran out, and that was it for their first drive. So when we can script something, man, he can really cook. And now he's got the guys to do it. I think it all comes down to the offensive line. Like, your guys can block, run, and pass. The whole playbook is open, and I don't feel like it's always been open. And then the other thing is, he's just got so many tools in terms of his receivers and what they can do, whether it's Edrin, who's more possession, tight ends that can catch. Say Jenna's suddenly like a touchdown machine. Hadn't scored a touchdown since high school, and he's 24 years old. And now he's got two in 3 weeks. Wide receiver reverses to Cam Courtney, utilizing Cam Ross in a way that we've utilized Malik Washington. I think he's been genius the first 4 weeks. So I can't wait to see what he can do against a much better defense too.
Yeah, that's the question this week. Yeah, the part that's impressed me the most, and I've talked about it the last couple of weeks, is kind of the chess game that he's playing with how he's setting things up. The first drive of the game, they had the screen pass out to Terrell Harris for a touchdown. Then later in the game, the third touchdown that Harris scored, it was another like fake screen to on both sides. I was looking back at it because I don't think I caught this in real time. Edrin and Harris both kind of like came back like they were going to take a screen, and then they both took off downfield. Both of them were open, but Harris got or Morris got flushed out the other way towards Harris, and so that's where he went with the ball. And I'm glad you mentioned that one play with Morris running in for the touchdown, because I was having trouble trying to keep up with it. And then I asked Morris afterwards, "What was the plan here? Like, were you supposed to throw it, or was it supposed to be a run all the way around?" He was like, "I just took what was there. That was the play."
Another thing that you're seeing too with his offense that has been so beneficial is they're really fit. And credit to the offseason conditioning, nutrition, all these things that Coach Elliott talked about that were important. You hit a deep pass down the field when the opposition has their pass rush unit out. You'll see Virginia just NASCAR it. That's what they call it. I mean, just go as fast as they can, get the ball to the line of scrimmage because they got all these lightweights in to rush a pass, and then suddenly we're, in the red zone pounding away at these guys on the ground. So how many times have we seen, a big play followed by an 8 or 9 yard rush? And then suddenly, you're in the red zone with a second and one and you got all these options. So hats off to the conditioning staff too for having these guys ready to be able to do that.
Well, and that's the mismatch hunting too that they talked about before the season, is wanting to, kind of attack this. And I keep using the metaphor, but like an NBA superstar in the playoffs, like bring me the weak matchup and, go at it. That's just what they've been doing this year consistently, is all right, we've got this personnel on the field, let's go at their weakness here. Chandler Morris, this is a really interesting game for him, because we've kind of seen he's kind of had to go through the motions a little bit against NC State. You got to see him kind of unleash it a little bit towards the end there. But this week, 23 for 31, 399 total yards, 5 total touchdowns. It's a third career game with 5 total touchdowns. The other two came last year at North Texas. The 380 passing yards are the third most nationally this week. He had a 219.7 passer rating, which is the highest among all qualified passers last week. And then the fourth highest QB rating, according to ESPN's total QBR stat in the country. It was best in the ACC. And I believe, from my research, it is the highest total QBR since the stat became something back in like 2011 for a UVA quarterback in a single game. A great week all around for Chandler Morris.
So you're saying he had a pretty good game. I
That
asked
was, yeah.
Chandler a couple weeks ago. I was like, "Hey man, like, who do you model your game after?" And once I say it, you're gonna be like, "Yeah, that makes sense." He said Baker Mayfield, and he
Yes.
looks just—I mean, they're both from Texas. I think they actually have a little bit of a relationship. I don't know
I'm
how or
sure.
why,
Yeah.
but he went to Oklahoma, or he went to Oklahoma.
Yeah, he was at Oklahoma,
For
so.
a second, and then before transferring to TCU. So, man, when I look at him, I'm just like, it's baby Baker. He's starting to play like it too. The improvisation, the swagger. I don't think Chandler Moore is a little more polite than Oklahoma Baker Mayfield. He's kind of aged out of that a little bit now that he's a pro. But Chandler's got that Baker Mayfield vibe, that sneaky quickness, and then just the ability to hang it up downfield, playmaking. He can rack up some yards. And if we got a Baker Mayfield clone running our offense, I will take it any day. That's what we got right now.
Yeah, that heart of Texas. You mentioned Baker Mayfield, and that's exactly what I was thinking, because I was watching some NFL yesterday, and I was like, All right, I was watching the Buccaneers and I was like, I just saw this yesterday. That was what Chandler Morris was doing out there on the field. And yeah, swag wise, I don't know who planned the crowning celebration there, but it was well deserved for Chandler Morris. It was kind of his, everyone's like, yeah, he's been a really good quarterback for the through the first couple of games, but like hadn't really got to see him like go out there and have a game like that. And so that was kind of the unique part of Saturday as far as that offensive line. Do want to make note real quick, Virginia kind of sweeping up with the ACC Player of the Week awards. Chandler Morris, Trell Harris, and Mikhail Boley all winning Player of the Week awards. Mikhail Boley had a phenomenal game. He was named to the PFF National Team of the Week. So that's the good. The bad is the injury problem. That's Brady Wilson going down in the middle of the offensive line. Out of all the offensive line injuries this year, that one's the toughest because that's the guy in the middle of the line that is kind of controlling things and, making the calls and has that connection with Chandler Morris. It was a calf strain, Tony Elliott said. I know they're still doing tests and stuff, but it changed a little bit and took them some time to get into a groove after Brady Wilson went down.
Yeah, and what also happens is Drake Metcalf has to move over. So you're losing, a starting guard, putting him at center where he's theoretically not as effective. And then we had a little issues with whoever came in to fill in for Drake Metcalf. So it's kind of a domino effect, but I haven't been to practice. I don't know anything. Typically, I have a pretty good idea when I can read the orthopedic staff or the coaching staff. And I didn't notice a ton of concern. Even if you looked at Brady on the sideline, he didn't seem all that devastated. So hopefully he'll be ready to go because that's huge. I mean, you got your quarterback, but maybe the second most important person on the offense is the center, with all the calls they make and the tone they set. Then they're the only other person that's touching the ball on every single down. The good news is too, like we'll have a good idea of if Brady can play or not. It's one thing if he gets hurt in the first quarter and then suddenly you're scrambling and Drake Metcalf is taking the tape off of his hands and you're working that all out in the game. But they'll be prepped throughout the week on all the scenarios now.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And Drake Metcalf, to his credit, had played center both at Stanford and UCF before coming here. So he's at least repped at the position. I know he obviously, takes snaps during practice at times. And it was kind of an unfortunate week for it to happen because the normal backup right guard, who I thought has played really well this year when he's got in there, is Ethan Sipe, who was out for this game. And that's why Kevin Wigginton was flipping over from usually the backup left guard to playing the right guard position, but he also came in on the injury report. So it was just kind of a tough situation all around. But luckily, the game was had at that point, and now they got a week to, or less than a week, honestly, because it's a Friday night game this week, but they got time to figure it out. But I think Drake Metcalf can do well at the position. It's more about what happens at that right guard spot if Metcalf isn't playing there. Defensively, we'll start with the return of number five, Cam Robinson. And if anyone forgot that he was out there, he kind of made it known there towards the end of the game with the fumble recovery and the did he or did he not get the forced fumble. It's credited Jason Hammond. Cam said after the game, he was like, no, it was Jason Hammond. Jason Hammond said that Cam was arguing with him after the game about who it belonged to, but ultimately, they gave it to Jason Hammond. But big game back for Cam Robinson, led the team with seven tackles.
Yeah, Cam is he's the best player, but maybe on this entire roster. I mean, he does things that no one else can do. John Rozinski told me during the offseason that Cam Robinson has the top flatline speed of anyone on the team. So if you line guys up for a 40-yard dash, probably not going to win it. Davis Lane might win that. He was a prolific high school sprinter. He's probably the fastest guy on the team. But if you get guys all at top speed, Cam Robinson is the fastest player on the team. Faster than Trell, faster than Cam Ross, faster than Davis Lane. Cam Robinson at over 200 pounds as a linebacker is the fastest player on the team. And I'm like, I'm still wrapping my head around that. He's got instincts, he's got playmaking ability, he's got attitude, and he loves to hit. And I asked Coach Elliott too. I was like, are you worried about the collarbone re-breaking? He's like, no, it's like mechanically repaired. Like there's a screw and plate in it, so it's actually in theory stronger than just naked bone.
So now
So
Cam Robinson is not only the elite athlete, he's also like part Terminator
yeah,
and
he's RoboCop at linebacker. So Cam just brings an attitude and speed that you don't see. And I think what's really interesting about this upcoming game with FSU is Cam Robinson could have very well been playing for the opposition on Friday. He was close. He had committed to Virginia. UVA just in a way discovered him, was the most all in on him before his star really blew up across the East Coast with teams wanting him. Got his commitment, and Florida State kept going after him, which is in this day and age is like all's fair. Everybody does it. Back in the old days, like that might get you in trouble of recruiting a committed prospect. But Cam took an official visit to FSU while
And
committed
they rolled
to
out the red
UVA.
carpet for him too.
They wanted him so bad, and we all see why. So I think this is a really neat game, and I love the fact that Cam believed in this program, that he honored his commitment, and he now has a chance to lead the school that he committed to over Florida State against Florida State. So if you want somebody to follow into a game like this, five's a pretty good one.
And thank you, John, for teeing up my article later this week. I asked Cam about that whole situation, so that's coming up on the Sabre.com later this week. Obviously great to have Cam Robinson back out there. And he said after the game, like, this is a game that he's had highlighted on his calendar for a while. He wasn't unabashed about it. He was like, yes, I've been looking forward to this Friday night against Florida State coming into town. Other quick notes, 5 sacks for this defense. That's the most against a Power Four opponent since at Wake Forest last year when they had 6 in that game. Daniel Rickard, I've kind of said, he's got 2.5 sacks now in the season. I think he is their most effective pass rusher, and that's crazy with all the talent they brought in this year. The guy from Tennessee Tech that's 6'2", 200, what do we give him, 30, 50 pounds? Like, that he is the most effective guy in the pass rush right now.
It's wild because he was signed after spring ball, I think. Like he was kind of just an add-on, like a nice to have. I didn't make much of it. You get a guy from the OVC, which is not like a power conference, even in FCS standards. I was like, oh, that's a nice, piece. I hope he gets in a little bit, maybe. And then I went to a scrimmage at the beginning of fall camp, maybe 2, 3 weeks in at Scott Stadium. And he dominated the scrimmage. I mean, he was everywhere. It was sacks and forced fumbles. And like, I just remember looking over at Jeff White being like, who is 52? Like, I've never seen that guy in my life. I don't know anything about him. And like, that's Rickard, and he's a player. So he was not a one scrimmage wonder. He's worked his way into this. He's only getting better. Keep in mind, like he played at Georgia. He was at Tennessee Tech. They played some power conference schools, but that's just different. When you're the best player, they can double team you the whole time. So he's getting a chance to shine. And he's also getting help from guys like Jahmyr Carter and Anthony Britton, who he's playing alongside. But I can't wait to see what else he can do this season. Ahmad, my color analyst, calls him our Rudy. I don't think that's fair.
He's
Like,
a little better
he's
than
a lot
Rudy.
better than Rudy. But you get the point.
I do remember I had Chandler Morris on the podcast before the season started, and I asked him who is the one guy on defense that gives you the most headaches, and without hesitation, it was Dan Rickard, was the guy that was giving him the most problems. And obviously, we're seeing that now for some other quarterbacks on Virginia's schedule. Last thing on this game that I wanted to touch on was probably the only thing that you could really take away from this and be like, what's going on here? And that is the big pass plays. Stanford had 5 big pass plays in the game, including a 68-yard touchdown and another 60-yard completion that set up a touchdown. According to our friend on X on the social media platforms, Danny Neckel, UVA has allowed 3 pass plays of 60-plus yards this season. Only UAB has allowed more this year. So a lot of question marks there, and there was some safety moving around. Last week, Devin Neal was the starter. Christian Charles came in and played pretty much most of the second half. Antonio Cleary got I don't know how many snaps ended up being, maybe five or six snaps at the end of the day. It wasn't a whole lot as he's kind of ramping up. And then Ethan Minter played the majority of the game out there at safety. But just what are you seeing right now as far as the safety play and these big pass plays? How much of a concern do you think it is going forward?
It's a major concern knowing the opponent that's coming up. Florida State can fly. They
Yeah.
love big pass plays. I think Makai Dansey is like an ACC record holder in track in the 400 meters. Like, they got 6 foot six receivers.
Yeah,
They
the
got,
other guy, Deuce Robinson, 6 foot whatever, like
yeah, they are a track team with helmets on. And this wide receiver core for Florida State is a huge step up compared to anything that we've seen. It's got to get fixed. And a lot of it just comes down to communication and alignment. And they've said that. So it's not a
yeah.
talent issue. It's a communication issue. So hopefully it gets fixed. We've had some deep balls completed against us, mostly in games where it didn't hurt us that
Yeah.
much. William & Mary and this past one against Stanford. But it's got to get fixed now, or Florida State can make this a pretty long night.
Yeah, one, and you can kind of toss it aside, but it seems like the same issue, just some kind of communication breakdown between the safety and the corner. It like each time it looks like, oh, maybe was the corner supposed to like carry with that receiver going long, or was the safety supposed to come over the top? So it just looks like that kind of communication issue has not been ironed out yet, and this is the week to do it if you're going to do it. Because setting it up now, number 8 Florida State coming to town Friday night, primetime affair at Scott Stadium. It's the first time a top 10 ACC opponent has come to Scott Stadium since Louisville back in 2016. But the last time that Virginia beat a top 10 team at home in Scott Stadium was 2005 when Marcus Hagans, that daggum number 18, beat number 4 Florida State in Scott Stadium. And then it's also the 30th anniversary of the 1995 win, which was Florida State's first ever loss in ACC play back when that team was ranked number 2 in the country. I'm currently doing a rewatch of that game. I think I told you over the weekend because I've got a special podcast planned for later in the week with one of the great players on that team, Demetrius Petey Allen, coming on later this week to talk about this UVA Florida State rivalry a little bit. A lot going into this one. I know everyone's kind of had this one circled because you don't get a game like this very often in Charlottesville.
No, and going into the season, we didn't think it'd be this big. Like, let's be real. Who actually
Yeah.
thought Florida State was going to beat Alabama?
Yeah.
Florida State's coming off of a 2-10 season. Interesting enough, Florida State, they haven't won a road game since 2023, which is comforting to know. This is one of the biggest gains we've had. I mean, I'm trying to think. I think it's the biggest one since Virginia Tech at home.
Yeah.
Where we won and went to Charlotte. I can't think of a bigger one. Not just because the number 8 team in the country is coming here, but just everything that's surrounding it that you mentioned. 30-year anniversary, 20-year anniversary, the next
Yeah.
win, a top 10 team. It's got to be Florida State. Like, it's if Georgia Tech came in here ranked 8th, which they might, next year, like, that'd be great. That's cool. But it's Georgia Tech. This is one of the league's great empires, and no matter what their rank when they come in, it means something. But when they're top 10 and undefeated, and it's on a Friday night, there are so many millions of people that are going to watch this game. You know,
Yeah.
3, 4, 5 million, maybe more. This is our chance to basically run a 4-hour commercial for Virginia football. And I guarantee you, like, recruits, they're gonna play their games on Friday night, but they're gonna see the highlights. And they're going to rewatch things, and they're going to see things on Saturday morning. This is our chance to really make a statement, not just to ourselves, to our own fans, to the conference, but also nationally. And I think people will take notice of what we're doing here. And then think of everything that you get if you win this game. You get momentum with fans. You probably get a top 25 ranking,
I
and
would think so.
you are essentially a top candidate for the ACC championship game. You have a tiebreaker over one of the top teams in the conference, and you've got a lighter schedule coming up. Now, Louisville's a tough matchup. At Carolina is not easy. Going to Cal is not easy. Like, no game's going to be easy, but the tiebreaker matters. So if Virginia beats Florida State, and then the next week Florida State turns around and beats Miami, Virginia's, they don't play Miami. Like, they've got an advantage not only over Florida State, they have it over Miami too. So there's so much to be gained just in this one game, from a small picture to a large one. And in all honesty, there's not a lot to be lost.
Yeah.
We're not expected to win this game, and that's what makes these things so fun.
Friday night ACC games can get a little weird too. We've seen the Syracuse games over Clemson up in the dome. There have been some interesting games over the years, and so a Friday night element to this kind of adds something different. And you just think back at, like, obviously 95 and 2005 come to mind, but even 2019, like, that was kind of a launching point for that season. With that Virginia team, and just kind of a lot of the history, there's so much history and, like, some of the best memories in this program come against Florida State. There hadn't been a lot against Virginia Tech over the years, but a lot of these memories have come against Florida State. And I know Virginia is doing a little something extra to kind of honor some of those memories with some uniforms that are coming out. I know you got a sneak peek. You don't want to say anything, but and actually, I think, like, right after this podcast is released on Monday night, I think fans will have a better idea.
Yeah, it's nice. That's all I can say. I have seen photos, and people are going to be very happy about it. Whoever is wearing number three for us has got to wear like a dark visor, and we'll just be convinced it's Anthony Poindexter out there.
I think Jamari Taylor fits that to a
Yeah,
T, right?
Jamari needs to wear the visor.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to wear like James Ferrier size shoulder pads.
Oh my gosh. Like I said, I was doing the rewatch, and, like, I was 2 years old when that game happened, but, like, seeing James Ferrier and Jamie Sharper and all those guys in that defense was crazy. I was like, gosh, you forget about some of the talent that's been in this program over the years.
Yeah, it was why there was talent on that Florida State team. I mean, think about
Oh
the
yeah.
last play. The last play is direct snap into Warrick Dunn, who's one of the all-time great college running backs,
Yeah.
getting stopped by Adrian Burnham and Anthony Poindexter, one of the greatest safeties to ever play college football, while George Welsh is on one sideline and Bobby Bowden is on the
Yeah.
other. It's so cool. If you've got time, and I know you've done this, Preston, go back and just watch that
Oh yeah.
game. And it's so neat.
People
And
doubted me that the whole game would be on YouTube. I won't name him here, but I was like, no, that game's on YouTube for sure. Like, you can find it. And, like, not only that, but, like, the link I found had, like, the whole pregame coverage going up to it. And so, like, it was like Chris Fowler and Lee Corso and Craig James on the pregame. And then you've got, I didn't even remember, like, Gary Danielson and
yep. Dr. Jerry Punch
Dr.
is on
Jerry
the
Punch on the
sideline.
sidelines. Like, I was like, golly, like, these are some legendary names in broadcasting too. So, like, it's a fun rewatch. Tom O'Brien with a full head of hair, and he's got the big earmuff, headset on, calling plays for Virginia. Like,
All of it. Bobby
this.
Bowden's got the FSU 90s windbreaker on, and like air traffic controller headset. All of
Yeah.
it's really special.
It
And
is.
looking back at that game, you just hope that we can recreate some of it on Friday.
Hoping for a little bit of magic. I know you'll be using some magic up in the broadcast booth as always. You got a good feel for this. I'm not, we won't do predictions. It's too early in the week, but you got a good feel for this game yet?
Not yet. Yeah, it's still Monday. I can't tell you. I've watched some Florida State, and
Yeah.
boy, they don't look like a team that went 2-10 last year. And
It's
Thomas
wild.
Castellanos does not look like a quarterback that got benched at Boston College last year.
Not even the
They
guy
are,
that came to Charlottesville last year. He looks better than that guy too.
yeah. I mean, Virginia kind of started the unraveling of him
Yeah.
last year. Forced fumble, return for touchdown, interception. He threw in a cheap shot at the end with a late hit after an interception that was like borderline ejection. He did not have a good game in Scott Stadium, and then it all kind of fell apart that season. And now he looks and is playing the part of a Heisman contender. So it's amazing what a different change of scenery can do for you. Same colors though.
Yeah, same colors. That's right. Yeah, easy to find out there. But John, thank you for coming on for this centennial episode. I know it's a busy week. It's a fun week though. Like these are the kind of games that you love to kind of have the like emotions kind of build up as you get towards kickoff.
Yeah, I gotta simmer down. I'm gonna go watch
That
some of the 95 game and listen to the radio call. And I got coach is always like, you can't play the game before the game. And that's exactly what I need to avoid doing.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, thank you again, John. That'll do it for the Who's On podcast. Again, like I said, we will be back later this week and release the podcast a little earlier this week. We'll probably put it out on Wednesday morning, seeing as that game is on Friday with Demetrius Pete Allen. Looking back at that 1995 game and this UVA Florida State game throughout the years. But like, leave a comment, subscribe over on YouTube. You know the drill. Over on the Who's On podcast YouTube channel, follow, leave a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify. Thank you, and we will see you later in the week.